For the entire Defense Department, the bipartisan budget agreement was only a brief reprieve from sequestration. Starting in 2016, DOD is scheduled to revert back to the funding caps its leaders have been warning for years would be destructive to national security. In the first year of the cuts, the Army says it had to absorb the sudden reductions in the areas of its budget where spending could be reduced immediately. Along with civilian pay and facility maintenance, troop training was one of a handful of such areas. General Ray Odierno, the Army Chief of Staff, says the service had to cancel 7 rotations through its combat training center, leaving only 2 of its 45 brigades fully trained and ready to deploy to a contingency.
We're higher than that now. We're probably closer to 5 or 6. You'll continue to see an increase in that readiness as we invest the dollars we got in 14 in combat training center rotations. So it will increase. The problem is readiness is temporary. It's good for about 6 months to a year. So if with the funding of 14, 50, well, but if it falls again in 16, we're going to go back into this readiness problem again, and we're going to have to sustain a tiered readiness profile, which says we'll only have certain units that will be ready. We will rotate them through the Army force generation process, so it will change between units as we move forward. But that's really the crux of our problem with sequestration, because at 16, we're going to have another readiness dive if it's not changed. We have no choice because we can't take out the end strength fast enough in order to balance it.
Odierno says the Army knows it's facing a readiness problem even if Congress unexpectedly cancels the remaining years of sequestration, so it's reducing its total number of soldiers in order to shift that personnel spending into training its remaining forces. But even with a delay of the full sequestration figure to 2016, there are practical limitations to how quickly the Army can shrink itself. In the meantime, he says, soldiers are less trained and more vulnerable in combat than they ought to be.
It does in the interim. So in other words, for 5 or 6 years, as you're building, it all has to do with as you're taking end strength out, you then don't have enough readiness. But once you get that end strength out, we'll be able to sustain a readiness level that's appropriate. And that's the end state. And so at the end state, you have a smaller army that's ready. But in the meantime, it creates great uncertainty and unreadiness, because we have to be very careful on how we take soldiers out of the Army. We want to make sure we can still meet our current operational commitments. We want to make sure we take care of our soldiers as we take them out. And we're taking out nearly 20,000 a year now out of the Army. And for us to get down to sequestration levels, we would have to continue that for another 5 years.
But Odierno says that even once the Army reaches the balance point in which it has a force that's right-sized to the point that it can afford to adequately train it, there's a significant chance that the force will be too small to perform its missions. In the 5-year budget the Army submitted to Congress last month, officials said they could continue to execute the current defense strategy at a level of 450,000 active duty soldiers, compared to the 490,000 they estimated they'd need when the strategy was first rolled out in 2012. If sequestration stays in place, the Army would need to reduce its size to 420,000 in order to keep its remaining forces ready. Defense hawks have been skeptical about the Pentagon's claims that it could maintain its long-standing objective of being able to engage in 2 simultaneous conflicts at even that 490,000 soldier figure. But if the Army's current projections about sequestration's impact on the long-term size of the Army are accurate, that 2-war debate becomes moot.
At the 440,000 to 450,000 level, I believe it is significant risk to meet the defense strategic guidance, but we can meet it. And I think that's based on the assumptions that we made. And I think the assumptions are optimistic. I believe that the assumptions of length of warfare, the assumptions on the contribution of our allies, the assumptions on casualties and others are somewhat optimistic. And I believe that increases the risk based on my experience and what we've experienced in the past. Although I do believe we can meet the defense strategic guidance. At 420, that will make it very difficult. As we reduce capacity, we lose flexibility. And therefore, when we lose the flexibility, that means our assumptions must be accurate. And over the years, my experience tells me our assumptions are not always very accurate. And so I'm very concerned that at 420, we cannot meet the defense strategic guidance. I doubt whether we could even execute one prolonged multi-phased operation that is extended over a period of time. And so I have great concern. And what will happen is this again falls on the shoulders of our our soldiers when this happens, and that's my concern.
Given the stark realities of the Army's budget math, John McHugh, the Army Secretary, says there's no wiggle room in the budget for lawmakers to protect pet projects or force the service to spend money it doesn't want to. Instead, he says, Congress should get on board with DOD's proposals to save dollars where it can, including more base closures, the retirement of lower priority weapon systems, and changes to military compensation programs.
If sequestration, as is the law, returns in 16, our gains will erode, and another round of indiscriminate cuts will gut our force to the point that we'll be unable to meet the strategic guidance. As I opened with, we deeply, perhaps more so than in any other recent time, need your leadership and need your help. This is a time for protection and predictability, not politics.
But in Tuesday's hearing, lawmakers voiced relatively few public objections to those Pentagon proposals to save cash. One issue that did arise more than once was the Army's proposal to downsize its reserve component. William Enyart is a Democrat from Illinois.
The National Guard is significantly more cost-effective over its life cycle at approximately one-third of the cost when not mobilized and approximately 80 to 95% of the cost when mobilized. So I'm not sure that I understand why we're proposing to cut the National Guard instead of relying on it more.
Enyart did not allow the Army witnesses to answer his question, but in their prepared testimony, McHugh and Odierno said that, yes, the reserve component would shrink under their plan, but proportionally nowhere near as much as the active duty Army.
The end strength cuts to the active Army represent 70% of the total end strength reductions, compared with 20% from the National Guard and 10% from the U.S. Army Reserve. This results in that the Guard and Reserves will now comprise 54% of the total Army end strength, while the active component will comprise 46%. The Army will be the only service in which the reserve component outnumbers the active component.
McHugh says the Army has done all it can to prepare for two possible futures, one in which sequestration stays in place and one in which Congress gives DOD the funding it thinks it needs. But he says the decisions the Army needs to make right now will affect the next several years, and it can't make them until Congress figures out a long-term plan for how much money it wants to spend on the military.
I need to be very clear up front. The time for action is now. We must have this budget to properly restructure, to reduce and revamp our force, and quite frankly, we need it to protect your Army as we march in a dangerous and unpredictable future this year and next. May very well decide the fate of the world's greatest combat force and could have implications for both our nations as well as the world's security for many years to come.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.